The Off the Ball Bank of Ireland Rugby Roadshow is coming to the Dexcom Stadium. Join some of Connacht Rugby's biggest stars, including Finlay Beelam, Billy Bowen, Paul Boyle and Sean Muldoon, plus very special guests Ryan O'Driscoll and Andy Dunn, to preview the upcoming rugby season. Don't miss your chance to be there. Get your tickets now at offtheball.com/events.
The Green Scene on Off the Ball with Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to another episode of The Green Scene. As always, The Green Scene on Off the Ball is with Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams. We've got a full house in studio for the first time in quite a while. I've got David Wilson to my left. I've got Ben Symes to my right. Lads, how are you keeping?
All good, can't complain.
Very well.
Yeah.
I'm flying.
Flying.
I don't think I've been better.
Wow. Why so? Why so, young man?
Football. Football is just magnificent, lads. The FAI Cup, brilliant on the weekend. League of Ireland, brilliant the weekend. Am I forgetting anything? Was there a competition back last night?
There might well have been a competition.
Might have been a competition, yeah.
Back last night.
Quite a big one.
Yeah, quite a big one is right. And quite a lot of Irish involvement. Some significant Irish involvement for the first time in quite a long time to this degree. And I think we might have someone that may be able to bring that home for us right now.
Yeah.
Ahí va pierna derecha Fornal.
Yeah. You may very well have heard the name of the person that he was talking about there. Of course, that was the local Spanish commentary of Troy Parrott's winner against Lille in the Champions League last night, lads. That's pretty special.
Yeah,
Marca Troy.
It was actually the winner against Real Madrid.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Well, you would have told me that.
I thought that's what I said in our pre-show meeting. Anyway, doesn't really matter. It was unbelievable scoring a winner against Real Madrid and scoring a winner against Lille.
And you know what Owen Doyle said last night? Scoring a winner against Real Madrid, scoring the winner in Champions League debut. Imagine that not being the best 4 days of your life.
Yeah, that is a fair point.
Let alone the last year. This is unbelievable.
Yeah. Like last Friday, where were you? It was a bit of a where are you moment when Parrott scored that goal.
Are you
against Real Madrid? Yeah.
I was in the press box in Tallaght Stadium.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Commentating on Sean McGrover Shelburne, and then one of our colleagues, David Snape always just went, Parrott goal! And then all of a sudden everyone went, oh! And everyone goes scrambling. And then I announced to our listeners that Troy Parrott had just put a Real Betis 1-0 up. It was very, very, it was a nice addition to what was a terrible game in Tallaght Stadium on Friday night to hear that go in.
Yeah.
It was one of those it was kind of like, God, I wish I saw that live. I wish I saw the reaction from the fans live. And then you're like, you get home and you're consuming every single bit of content.
Yeah, whatever's available.
And by God, do they put up content about Troy Parrott. And there was one video in particular which I saw someone take from the sideline. And it's just him like going off celebrating. And the camera pans and Jose Mourinho is just stood there beside him. And I was like, this just couldn't get any better. This is perfect. This is the best possible way you could announce yourself. The winner against Real Madrid, against a manager that gave you your debut.
Yeah.
At home. Perfect.
Yeah.
Troy Parrott's had a lot of moments over the last couple of months, hasn't he? Where a lot of people would take your arm off to have one moment like that across a 25-year career.
Like El Irlandés de mi vida. Like, you know, the Irishman of my life. Is he becoming the Irishman of our generation? Like, here's hoping. He's 24 years old. He's at the start of this new chapter at Real Betis, and it's been so exciting so far. And it's just been such a feel-good Irish football story as well this last couple of weeks, because we obviously, I know, no offence, Ben, I know you're a West Ham fan, but it is just nice to have someone. I know do you love the continent more? Do you love West Ham? Who knows?
I was delighted to see Troy Parrott not go to West Ham. Like, West Ham is a graveyard for strikers.
True.
If Troy Parrott goes to West Ham, he's just like, and this is no disrespect to Troy, he just becomes another run-of-the-mill player because of what West Ham is.
Yeah.
And because of what the Championship is. It just manages to turn players into these type of things, I was delighted.
Yeah.
I couldn't have been happier. I would have rather seen him stay at AZD than go to West Ham.
Yeah. But, and then if you fast forward then to last night, like last Friday, we had a match, which we won't go into that. So I just was coming out of the game and like, oh, Troy Parrott just scored and he scored a winner. I was like, oh my God, that's unbelievable. And then like last night we had a training and I was coming in and literally as I was walking in the door of the house, Troy Parrott, goal, Real Betis, ran to the TV, flicked it on. I was like, oh, this is unreal.
Yeah.
This is so good. Like
smashing goal too.
Like
great finish.
A proper centre forwards goal. Mm. You know, Keith Tracy off the ball breakfast this morning describing as like he didn't go running behind and kind of lose his head. He just waited patiently, stood up his defender 1v1. The defender's like, ah, oh, you go have a go down your left foot. No bother.
Yeah, because the pass wasn't perfect either. The pass wasn't perfect. He had a bit of work to do. There was probably a little bit too light of a waiting on the pass, but he made the most of it. And those are the chances you want to see him taking. Like he has missed a couple of big chances in his time at Betis already, but he's also managed to bag a couple of fairly important goals. You would describe them as.
But it's good that he's missing the chances though.
Yeah, I was going to say he is consistently in the position.
Yeah.
And like he misses that one against Levante, and you're kind of going, "Oh God, that's like I hope that isn't a moment that ends up being a big confidence breaker." Not at all.
Yeah.
Like he comes on the pitch against Real Madrid. He's on the pitch 1 minute and he's trying to hit an effort from 30 yards that whiskers past Courtois' post. He's in the right place then for the goal when it comes back off Courtois. And what's really underrated is how he lifts it over Courtois because he knows that Courtois often spreads his leg up like that. And he lifts it up over the leg that's spreading. And then last night again, misses a chance where, you know, like I think you'd be harsh if you were to criticise him for it. It's bouncing, he's on the stretch at the back post and he doesn't manage to keep it down. If he does keep it down and goes in, you're there talking about how brilliant of a goal it is and how brilliant technique it is. And then again, finds himself exactly in the right place. The little step over is so good as well. Like the centre half is almost like, go on your left foot. I don't mind that. And he goes, I'll take that. So step over, out of the foot, bottom corner, bang, done. Good night. Lille. What a stadium, lads. Lille.
Yeah, obviously his good friend Robbie Brady scored that famous goal for Ireland there. What was it? Over 10 years ago now.
Yeah, it's sickening. that is sickening.
Yeah, well, imagine, I'm older than you and how sickening it is.
We all know that, yeah.
But no, even just to have an Irishman playing in the Champions League this season in a, is there any other Irish players going to play in the Champions League this year? Celtic aren't even in it.
Liam Boston's on the bench for Feyenoord.
Oh yeah.
So if an injury comes into play for Feyenoord's first choice goalkeeper,
he could be playing.
They actually play each other. Feyenoord and Real Betis play each other?
They might do.
Yeah.
We could have an all Irish affair. Like Boston was only playing for Cork City in 2020.
Yeah, hey, that's one of the more stranger careers.
We should get him on.
Yeah, we probably should. But yeah, it's just been a class couple of weeks. A couple of big games coming up. I think they play Villarreal on Monday night in the league.
Away.
Yeah, obviously another Champions League team as well. So interesting times.
Yeah, they've got some nice ties in the Champions League as well. There's a pretty big world in which they do actually manage to qualify. Like they've got some tasty ones, yeah, with Arsenal and their away to Borussia Dortmund as well. I think it should be some occasion to be involved in. But
they're away to Bayern Munich as well.
Yeah. There's some winnable games
It's the perfect mix, isn't it?
It is, it's nice.
You get to go to Bayern, you get to go to Dortmund, you get to host Arsenal, who obviously they beat in Dublin in the summer, and then you get during the winnable ties. And I wouldn't have said Lille was that winnable. Like going away to Lille.
I think they would have been looking at coming away with a point there, they would have been happy.
Very happy.
Yeah. And with the way it is, you're probably looking at, we were kind of saying this morning, maybe 10, 11 points, you should be fairly secure in getting through, at least in the bigger bunch than not the top eight, obviously, but Real Betis won't be aiming for the top eight. But if they end up in there, I'm sure they'll be fairly happy. Over the next few weeks with Troy Parrott, what are we looking for? What success? Because, I mean, initially, you look at it and go, okay, there's some big ties in there. He's going to get an experience in the Bernabeu. He's going to get a Champions League debut. They've gone far better than we expected. Or sorry, was the game in the Bernabeu or was it in Seville?
It wasn't
in the Bernabeu, but playing Real Madrid anyway against Jose Mourinho. You just wanted the streak not to last too long without him scoring. He's obviously gone and broken that and gone a bit further than that too. What do the next couple of weeks have to look like for us to go, do you know what, Troy's tipping away all right as we approach these games against Kosovo and the other Nations League games as well?
Well, when the goal went in against Real Madrid, when it all settled down after the goal against Real Madrid and you kind of brought yourself back down to earth, the first thing I thought of was how brilliant this is. Like, this buys him. He could not score for 10 games here. He's bought himself 10 games with a win against Real Madrid. Then goes scores the win in the Champions League 4 or 5 days later. Like, he could not score for the next 3-4 games. That's fine. Doesn't matter. like, and the confidence won't drop because he knows what he's done and the fans know what he can do. I think, like, if he scores next 10 games, scores 3 goals, maybe even 2 goals, I'm not worried at all.
I think we've really seen over the last couple of years, in particular for Troy Parrott, that even when he misses chances, like which he has done in the last few weeks, he doesn't bat an eyelid. Like, he backs himself so much. And again, we talked about this before on this show about, like, kind of the new generation of young Irish athletes. And Parrott has just so much self-belief. And it's a credit to him and a credit to the work he's done over the last couple of years. But I don't think I don't think anything fazes him. Like Keith Tracy was on this morning and he was talking about, like, you know, he'd be thinking before a game, looking in the hotel room mirror, thinking, am I good enough? Where I think is, you know, this generation and Troy Parrott has just so much self-belief. He's so much confidence in his own ability that he can go right to the very top. And, you know, Joe Cole obviously was speaking about, you know, our boy, you know, Parrott last night on TNT Sports. And maybe what the next move could be. Like, look, that's very early to be thinking about something like that. But as long as he just keeps playing, keeps knocking in the odd goal here and there, Bettis keep doing well, he's enjoying it, then we're totally fine.
Players from this neck of the woods is what Joe Cole said last night.
He was dancing around a big time. He said he went to say from these aisles and stopped himself.
Yeah.
But listen, we get very caught up in all that sort of stuff. He was well intended, he meant well, and we're happy enough to see Troy Parrott being spoken about in these realms too, you know.
Do you know what Joe Cole's autobiography is called?
Go on.
Joe Cole, luxury player.
I don't know why.
What do you mean?
Luxury player and Joe Cole, like, it's a bit harsh on him, like, to call himself.
I thought it's harsh on him to call him a luxury player, and then also, like, it's a weird title for a book, like, luxury player.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. Even if he does think that, you know, Troy Parrott is one of them.
Yeah, well, I can see a lot of Troy Parrott talk coming from this over the next couple of months, and hopefully so, because the last couple of episodes we've started the first 10 minutes with Troy and we've gone the same way today, so keep the goals coming, Troy. Before we move on to anything else that's going on, we're going to have something a little bit different coming your way in the Off The Ball members feed. David, you might explain what we're going to be doing. We're going to be answering some of your questions. I think I have to kind of put a bow on what it's going to be, but you might give the people a bit more detail.
Yeah, we are going to do a little bonus podcast for you every time we record a Green Scene with some listener questions, and we have a couple of listener questions in this week. So what's going to happen is we are going to record a little 10 to 15 minute segment with you know, just you, the fans, the our loyal listeners sending some questions, and that will be available to our members only. You can become a member at offtheball.com/join.
Now Seamus Coleman's been doing some talking. Thankfully we've heard from him after all these weeks and months of silence, really, which is his own prerogative. That's fine. He doesn't owe us anything at all at this stage, especially in a green jersey. There was the rumours of him going and playing a bit of Gaelic football for his team. He did confirm that he has been training with them, but didn't manage to get out on the pitch and play a game. Of course, he did feature on the Stick the Football podcast, which came out yesterday if you're a Disney Plus subscriber, and will be out on YouTube tomorrow. So some of the clips have been floating around. I don't want to hone in too much on anything specific, but just the general kind of feeling around Seamus Coleman and what we're going to see from him over the next little while. I mean, from a Green Scene perspective, the main takeaway, I'll start with you, Ben, I suppose, is that he was going to call it a day, had a conversation with him or Hallgrimsson, and decided, you know what, I might stick around for another 18 months or so and try and get into to the squad and feature at the home Euros in 2028.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't really news. Like, we did know this is why he's sticking around. He did tell us that a couple of months ago. But I think when he kind of says it to people, maybe Everton fans weren't so sure exactly what was going on. He did tell us that he spoke to Hamer Hallgrimsson, and he's basically that Ireland is the reason. So I'm not shocked to hear that. I saw Davis Nade reporting this morning that he is in the provisional squad for the games the end of the month. Not too shocked at that at all. Austria, actually, funny enough, we are going to be playing later this month, have a kind of similar story with David Alaba, who's unattached, and obviously he's a key player for them. Like, when does it get to the stage with Seamus Coleman before you kind of go, oh, he kind of needs a club now? Like, when do we get there? Are we looking at, like, the November international window? Because I'm not too concerned about this window, because I've seen what he could do before when he wasn't playing. And he's, as he said, he's still training. He's been training with Kitty Beggs. He's been training for a football club, a soccer club up in Donegal as well. So he's keeping fit. But I would wonder when does it come to stage. Like, I saw Roy Keane kind of question him and kind of said, like, listen, like, there is going to be a point where you're going to have to make a call on this. Mm. You can't just keep going on, I'll get somewhere that'll work, get somewhere to work. You kind of need to do it sooner rather than later. Like, we've no doubts about his conduct or how, his personality, but like, there does come a stage where you do need to be involved with a football club.
Yeah.
You do need to be playing. I think if he gets to a stage where there's no football club and he's not playing, then he absolutely needs to be brought into the staff, whether it's alongside him coaching at a club as well. He needs to be around those players. Like, I would wonder how close are we to that point?
Yeah, I suppose it is an evolving situation. So there is a world in which you come off air in 25 minutes and he has a club, and that's just the way these things tend to go. But I think we're approaching that point now, to be totally honest. Yeah. I wouldn't be concerned about, as you say, him being involved in the first couple of Nations League games. That's fine, that's grand. Like, he's obviously been in and around setups recently enough to be able to take part in those games. But moving on from that, teams are going to be in full flow. You can't really be jumping in. Whatever, jumping in January, because there's preparation done for that sort of thing. And I know he hasn't got a club, so he doesn't need to wait until January. But joining in with a club in November, December time, it's just not really how the game works. And no. Coleman is a unique scenario in which he has really kind of defied logic as far as the Republic of Ireland go after the last little while, considering he hadn't been playing and the age he's at and the injuries he's had, and he's gone in and been fine. But to answer the point you put there, from my perspective, I don't think we're far away from that point at all.
Yeah, I think he needs to be at least have a club before they go into camp in a few weeks' time. He's shown time and time again that even without playing, he can still perform at a really high level. But there's only so many times I think he can do that. He's vital to this Irish team. He's vital to Hamer Grimson and the culture that he wants to create within the squad as well. I just don't, it's so hard as well to get to the pitch of things when you haven't played. You're fit, but also then you're match fit. Like, are you ready? Are you conditioned to play against other players and other teams that are at 100% or 90%? Like, he won't be. He won't be if he hasn't played. I am worried about, the next couple of months as regards Seamus Coleman's participation in the squads. If he gets a club, happy days, he'll play. Like Keith Tracy said this morning, if he goes, he's most likely to go to the Championship. He's not going to be able to play Saturday, Tuesday, and I think that's fine. But if he can play every Saturday, or if he can play, half an hour here, half an hour there, 60 minutes in a couple of weeks' time, that's totally fine as well. Because really what he's doing is he's getting himself ready for the summer after next, and he needs to be in his kind of top physical form if he's going to be part of the Ireland squad. I think, an 18-month contract with a club in the Championship where he plays, instead of he doesn't play 50 games, he plays 25 games or 30 games. I think that's totally fine. I think that's what's to be expected as well.
Mm. We move off Seamus Coleman, but we'll stick with the defence. There's quite a lot going on, I suppose, in the central part of our defence as well. We've been playing with this 5-at-the-back, 3-at-the-back type system. I'll rattle through some of the stuff that is going on and we can hone in on one or two different pieces if you like. Nathan Collins obviously went off with an injury early on, slightly concerning for Brentford at the weekend. We'll have to see how that one pans out ahead of the internationals that are coming up. Dara O'Shea has been playing a lot of his football at right back. John Egan, of course, flying, one of the form players in the Premier League, let alone from an Irish perspective. Andrew Omobamadele hasn't been in a squad in quite some time, but got a pretty bizarre loan move that we didn't actually get to touch on because it happened after we last recorded, over to Anderlecht. It might work out well for him. James O'Bank was flying over in Italy, and Jake O'Brien, well, he is very much rooted to the bench. So if you look at Nathan Collins, Dara O'Shea and Jake O'Brien, who have been starting in our back three over the last little while, none of them are at an optimal place as far as their club form goes. I've left out Liam Scales there. Of course, he did score for Celtic at the weekend, and he's, of course, an option on that left-hand side. But
he's been playing left-back.
Yeah, he has been playing left-back. So if we do look at what that back three is going to look like, are you expecting it to be Collins, O'Shea and O'Brien?
Yes. Even if Collins seems to have looks like a calf strain, he mightn't play this weekend, but I think he should be fine for those games towards the end of the month. Obviously, Keith Andrews will update the media when it comes to things on Friday. I can't see it anyone other than being Collins, O'Shea and O'Brien. I could see a world where Dara O'Shea plays at right wing back, and I see someone else coming into the, maybe Liam Scales comes to the left of the back three, and Ryan Manning might play at left wing back. He's had a pretty decent start this season as well. So yeah, I think it's going to be a mixture of those players. James Abanko is obviously one that we've talked about playing maybe as a right wing back as well. And obviously Chidozie Ogbeni could also play right wing back. I know Abanko has played nearly pretty much every game or every minute for Udinese so far this season. He's been playing mostly in the middle of a back three.
Yeah.
So he has to do a bit of adjusting himself. I think it should be no problem for him. But yeah, O'Collins, I'd be very surprised if we're playing against Kosovo and guaranteeing that everyone is fit, that it isn't the back three, isn't O'Shea, Collins and O'Brien.
John Egan not done enough to force his way in, Ben?
I think he's definitely the four choice.
Yeah. Like, what I will say is what we've seen before from Hamer Grimson is that he doesn't place a lot of value on, but in terms of playing every week, he likes having his favourites. So Jake O'Brien is firmly within one of the favourites of that back three, and I think he would still pick Jake O'Brien. If Nathan Collins is out, like John Egan is 100% starting. It's not a bait.
Yeah.
And as well as missing Collins' capabilities in a back three, you're bringing in the leadership that John Egan has in a back three. John Egan's started the Premier League as been outstanding, like
probably the best defender in the Premier League so far this season.
Yeah, he actually arguably has been.
Yeah,
and he won man of the match at the weekend against Aston Villa. Hasn't conceded a goal. Incorrect there as well. Coventry, Manchester United, and Villa hasn't conceded a goal.
Yeah,
like this is a guy who we thought his career was done not that long ago. Club career could have been near finishing, let alone Ireland career. I think if anything is wrong in Nathan Collins, John Egan absolutely comes in. I am very interested to see what happens. In terms of, I would imagine if Nathan Collins is not fit, Seamus Coleman is 100% in the squad. I don't think he can go into this international break without both of them. Not even just what they give you on the pitch. Like, this is going to be pretty tumultuous off the pitch. We're travelling to Debrecen to play Israel. We are travelling to Bačka Topola in the middle of nowhere in Serbia to play Israel. You would have to imagine that Nathan Collins or Seamus Coleman are going to be the people speaking to the media for those games. And if Nathan Collins is not fit, James Coleman, you can put your house on it, will be the guy that's put in front of the media that day. But in terms of the back three, again, that's a no-brainer that John Egan comes in there if he can't play. Yeah. You would have to imagine the way that they've set up that back three, it is Jake O'Brien on the right-hand side of it, even though he hasn't played football. But like, it's a great headache to have. And we're into this weird scenario now where it's like a mini tournament of sorts in these four games that like people aren't going to be able to play all four games. So John Egan is going to have to start at least two of them for Ireland, whether he's in that kind of first choice back three or not.
Yeah,
and especially away games, you're kind of going, geez, would you throw him in there for them? Like,
yeah, I suppose it's an interesting dynamic, isn't it? That it's not a typical case of you play two games, you can play the exact same 11 out. We probably are going to have a bit of rotation here just purely because of the amount of games that we're going to be playing.
We haven't actually played, obviously I haven't played in the tournament for quite a while, but
yeah,
it is quite interesting how Grimson, Paddy McCarthy, O'Shea will approach these couple of weeks as well. Are you picking, you know, horses for courses? You know, there's a lot of travel involved. You know, it's quite difficult to get even to Kosovo. And there's obviously going to be, you're going to go back to, you know, to Dublin, then you'll go back out to Serbia. Like, it's going to be a rigmarole as regards travel. That takes a lot out of the players as well. We've seen that this time last year when the team went to Armenia after, you know, the Hungary game on the Saturday night, the players are lethargic, for want of a better word, in that game in Yerevan. So whether Hal Grimson probably has a plan for each of the games and what team he's going to pick, I would imagine he probably does. Yeah, maybe John Egan does play, you know, a vital cog on that. His leadership alone is worth having him in the squad. And, you know, it probably is going to be a squad of 26, obviously, but then there's probably going to be three or four there that are going to be hanging about, that are going to be called upon, especially if there's injury doubts.
Did you ever play an international career manager in Football Manager?
Yeah.
And you're like, when you do the qualifiers, you only have two games, and you're like, this is grand. Then you get to a tournament and you're like going into the third game of the groups and your players are bollocks.
Yeah.
And again, you have to have to play like all 23 or 26 members of your squad.
Yeah.
And like, you're like four and a half star players.
Yeah.
Like, you just can't play them because they're bollocks. This is basically what this is going to be like. Like, I feel like this Austria home game, if he hasn't rotated players between the first two, like the Austria home game, like, we could see a mad team.
Yeah,
like we could see like combinations that we haven't seen.
Maybe that's where we come back to be thankful for all those weird kind of games we had before the World Cup, where Hamer got to have a look at a lot of different guys.
Yeah, and exactly. I was writing about this in the Off the Ball members newsletter this week, that this could be the era of the, you know, the new Irish player. So the players that have been on the fringes, let's say, and have been in those squads, they're not familiar to maybe the more casual watchers of the Irish football team. Like, this could be the time where they come more to the fore. So the three players I picked out were Jack Moylan, Boston Lowell and James Abangue. Like, they've been in thereabouts, a couple of caps here and there, especially over the last couple of months. But this could be a super important time for those players and development of those players. And like we have talked about again, or talked about previously, you know, the more options that you have, the better it is for the team and for how Irish football is going forward.
Can I give a quick shout, sorry, just on that, because I don't think we're going to mention today, Rory Finneran, who had his debut in Marseille in May, has had an outstanding start to season with Notts County and looks, as we expected, a serious technical, an operator, you could say, in the middle of the park.
Neil Reardon writing today in the Sun about, he was obviously talking to Will Clark, and basically the Ireland are going to propel more players from a younger age group, from the younger age groups, into the senior squad. That's going to be more of a common theme, a common thread over the next couple of years. Obviously, we've seen that with Finneran and Jade Numa as well. Obviously, those players can play for other nations too. They have the option. But, you know, it's basically if you're young enough and you're good enough, you're old enough. So you never know. There could be a rogue shout in there. Obviously, there's a provisional squad that's doing the rounds at the minute, but there could be a rogue shout in there over the next couple of weeks.
Do you reckon there would be any benefit, and this is loosely linked to what you just said there, in holding more weight in players who perform well for our under 21 sides and under 18 sides than maybe those who are performing well for the club, who are maybe slightly older?
Yeah, it's hard to know. Like England, after the kind of the embarrassment of, let's say, Euro 2016, they kind of had a bit of a reckoning and they wanted to create nearly like a Club England model, and players that are playing in underage age groups wanted to play like a similar system, similar type of players. Now, that has some of its drawbacks too. I don't know if Ireland are on the same level as that. We've produced the same amount of talent or the same amount of, you know, similar players that are all used to a system. I know when Stephen Kenny came in, he wanted basically from the senior team all the way down to the under 15s, he wanted everyone play the same way. He's doing this with Pats, and they're on the right structures at the minute, that basically there's a pathway and that there's a philosophy there that all the players follow, coming up through the ranks, and then obviously then when they get to the first team, the senior team, that they just fit in straight away. I'm not really sure that kind of is replicated in the Irish setup just yet, but it is an interesting thing. You know, Jim Crawford and Hamar Grimson seem to work pretty closely together. There seems to be a bit more joined up thinking in this last couple of years within the FAI structures than there probably was previously. And I think a lot of that's even down to Stephen Kenny when he came in, and obviously going from the 21 to the senior squad. Yeah, I definitely think there is. Weight in maybe calling up a younger player and putting them in there that are used to, you know, the
international setup.
Yeah, the international setup, and are maybe familiar with some of the players that they're going to be playing with as well.
Well, the FAI have completely changed how they do underage football as well. The new coaches come in, there's like international lead coaches who are going to kind of stick with a player group, and they've got rid of kind of the old brigade of coaches we're in. Noel Hunt is in, Chelsea Noonan is in, I know Keith O'Halloran are in, there's a few more as well. And then you have international coaches who are going to go between the age groups. So the likes of Graeme Gartland is in there, Conor McCormick is in there, and a couple others as well. So what you're going to see now is a lot more collaboration and communication between all levels of both Irish underage football and then senior level football. Yeah. So you're going to have a complete body of kind of a scouting structure and network around all the players who are eligible to play for Ireland.
Yeah, IP, I think, is what they call it, Ben. IP. A lot of IP is going to be in the building.
The rugby fraternity called it, anyway.
Yeah.
Ben, you were talking to Shea Given. Talking to Shea Given during the week. So a lot going on with the goalkeepers at the minute. Even Kelleher's line. We spoke here about, you know, when Chelsea's Robert Sanchez was stinking the joint out for Chelsea, and we were kind of mulling over whether Caoimhín Kelleher might be an option for Chelsea. Obviously, they opted to go for Emi Martinez, I think a very wise decision considering where they're at and what their aims are. But Shea mentioned to you that he thinks Caoimhín Kelleher will be right at home at Liverpool once again. Now, we might come back to that in just a moment, but when you look at the pecking order for our goalkeepers at the minute, Caoimhín Kelleher is firmly number one, with no debate there. You're probably looking at Mark Travers, even though he's not playing that much football. That's a decision he decided to make, and maybe hope that Jordan Pickford continues this slightly dodgy run of form that he's been having over the last, I'd say, 180 minutes Not quite any longer than that, or he picks up an injury of some sorts. Gavin Bazunu is always someone who's in the squads. He's got a permanent move to Bolton, made his debut for them last night against your beloved West Ham, and things did not quite go to plan for Gavin Bazunu. It's been a tough couple of years, some not so great moves, never really settled at Southampton, has also had some horrific injury trouble. Would you be concerned about where he is in his career right now?
I wouldn't be concerned. He's so young for a goalkeeper still. It wasn't a great start, lads. Like, it really wasn't a great start for Matt Bolton, but it's a perfect club in the sense that he's kind of out of a bit of spotlight. Even Southampton are kind of bouncing up between Premier League and Championship, and you might play 10 games in the Premier League and you have the eyes of the world watching you. Like, he is a little bit out of the limelight at Bolton.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a bad move. I just think he needs to play some games. Like, I know Jack Bonham is the other goalkeeper there, who's obviously, we know, Ireland eligible as well. Like, Bonham's not getting any younger. I think he's 32, 33. He just needs a run of games under his belt with a back four in front of him that he will become accustomed to.
Yeah.
He's still so young.
Yeah.
Like, he's so young. We forget how young he was when he made, I think he was 19 when he made his Ireland debut.
Yeah.
There is so much more to come from Gavin Mazzuno. And I'd give it another good while before I start pressing any sort of panic buttons.
Mm. Yeah, I'd fully agree with that. I know, last night didn't go well, but he hasn't played a whole pile of football in this last couple of months, with injuries, with loan moves that haven't gone well, with, you know, coaches and managers not fancying them. He was, like, brilliant for when he came in for Ireland. And I don't think he really ever let Ireland down in at senior level at all, not that I can remember. And we're quite quick to maybe, I don't know, we're quite quick, I think, sometimes just to say, oh no, he's finished, you know, he doesn't have it, you know. It's just another example of maybe failed potential. I definitely don't think he is. I think he's 24. Goalkeepers generally get better when they get older. He is 10, 12 years hopefully in front of him, playing at a real top level. He's at Bolton, and you just mentioned the expectation level mightn't be so high there. Like, they're probably one of the favourites to go down in the Championship. Let's see what happens there. But I think it's a good move. He just needs to play some games. You don't think he's going to be in the Ireland squad, though, next week?
No, not that I don't think he's going to be in the Ireland squad. I would question as to whether he should be at this point. And I would probably actually question as to whether it would be totally beneficial for him.
Who would you put ahead of him?
I think Mark Travers is ahead of him in the eyes of Hamer Hagrens at this point.
And who's the third keeper?
My third keeper would probably be Max O'Leary or Josh Keighley. I would throw either of them in. Max O'Leary's had a pretty good start to life with West Brom this season. And I think Josh Keighley, albeit hasn't had an unbelievable start to the season for Luton, I do think is playing, well, he has been playing more consistently considering this is Bazunu's first game of the season. And you mentioned him being out of spotlight there. I know he's not going to be playing for the Republic of Ireland because Guévin Kelleher will, but God forbid that was to happen to him across these couple of games that are going to come in very quick succession. I wouldn't wish it on Gavin Bazunu at this current moment to be thrown in to a situation like that.
Yeah.
I don't think he's finished at all.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
But I do think that although we are quick, not us specifically, but as a people, to say, he's probably wasn't as good as we thought he was. I do think sometimes we're a bit slow as well. And I'm not saying that this applies in this instance, but sometimes we can give people the benefit of the doubt for too long. I don't think we're doing that with Bazunu just yet, but I think we have definitely done that in the past with other players that maybe haven't gone on to bear the fruit that we thought they might do. But yeah, wish them all the best, obviously.
Yeah, it's not, you know, your football career sometimes obviously is not linear, you know, especially when he was making that move, and he was probably one of the first that make that huge move from Shamrock Rovers in the League of Ireland to Manchester City, and you're thinking, right, okay, he's gone on loan really early to Rochdale, he's done really well, he's maybe, you know, going to go kind of to superstardom. It hasn't worked out like that, but he can definitely bounce back.
Mm. Can I say one very quick thing before we go to your questions? Got some breaking news from Spain, lads.
He's not injured.
This is good news. This is from El Chiringuito, what a show. It's from Gonzalo Tortosa, who is basically like this Sevilla correspondent for them. So Sevilla and Rayo Betis. He says, confirmed, Troy Parrott's release clause at Rayo Betis is €100 million.
Oh, perfecto.
A major bet by the club, considering the performance he could have and is currently having, the Irishman. From the club, they convey that he has adapted very quickly to Spain, goals against Real Madrid and Lille in the Champions League. He costs just €16 million plus €4 million in variables.
Variables.
€100 million.
Should we go and play a bit of old school nostalgia Revista de la Liga tune.
Yeah,
go on then.
Why not?
Anyone else get goosebumps there?
Imagine we were in the height of that at the moment. With Troy Parrott scoring goals.
Oh, Graham Hunter, Guillaume Balague, Gaizka Mendieta. Yeah. All talking about Troy Parrott.
Let's get our Irish correspondent, Jerry Armstrong, on the line.
luckily though.
Irish correspondent.
Luckily, you can get Graham Hunter off the ball these days.
Yes, you can. You can, of course.
You know, so we're not completely dead yet, folks. It's great. It's just unbelievable to have it.
Go on then. How many goals does he have to score in the next couple of weeks before Chelsea decide to pay $100 million? None.
They've already picked up the phone. Release clause, you say?
That is amazing. Because, like, you know, a couple of years ago, you hear something like that, you'd immediately think, "Oh, just satire. Just satire." But this is actually true. We've got an Irish player with £100 million release clause. €100 million. Not that means that, but it's there.
After the Evan Ferguson hat trick against Newcastle that time for Brighton, there was the whole.
Let's not get carried away.
We're not carried away. We're just speaking facts here, you know.
It's okay to get carried away like now and again because that's what sport does. It's you know, makes you enjoy these things.
What would be the point otherwise?
Yeah, exactly. But it's such a great start, and wow, it's exciting.
It is exciting. One more about Kelleher and Shea Given. Go on. What do you make of all that? What else was Shea Given saying? Anything interesting? Anything?
Oh, loads of stuff. Talking about Man City for the Premier League title. Slight concerns, not concerns, but doesn't really enjoy watching Arsenal and their style of play. Talk about Robbie Keane making the move to Match of the Day as a pundit, which he thinks is a good move in terms of putting yourself in the eye of the British public. And he says he can show his footballing mind to them. Spoke about Damien Duff, spoke about Keith Andrews' time at Off the Ball, and how the media career kind of prepped him for how well he deals with the media now. Loads of, obviously spoke with Troy Parrott, spoke with Evan Ferguson as well. Newcastle under Mattesi Isla and a couple of the players there. That's an interesting kind of non-Irish story. But plenty of Irish footballing opinions from Shea Given. You can find that for free in your Off the Ball feed on Monday. We record it, so you'll have to scroll back
a little bit. Okay, I just have one more statement to put to you before we go and record our members piece, right? Are the Northern Ireland side currently in a better place than the Republic of Ireland national team?
This is Ian Harris speaking to Belfast Telegraph, is it?
He insists that Brexit has made a significant difference. Therefore, the Northern Ireland national team are in a better place than the Republic of Ireland national team.
What's Ian Harris' job? What's his job now? Is he an agent?
Would this be Ian Harris' footballing agent?
Yeah. Like, is he trying to make and obtain players to make moves across the old Irish Sea, maybe? Look, I would be wary of reading too much into that interview. If Ian Harris really cared about, you know, Irish football or football on the islands, he'd be more interested in what's going on in the League of Ireland or the NFL Premiership and what's going on in the academy structures. And, you know, there's actually a cross academies day happening in Dublin in the next week or so as well. Clubs in the north playing clubs in the south, which should be more of those things should be happening. I would not read too much into that, but why not? What's the problem with Irish players going to Italy or Belgium or France or whatever it is, or developing their game here in Ireland and going to school here and maybe having a leaving cert to fall back on if everything doesn't go so well? You know, it's not the be all and end all. It's not John Giles going across the Irish Sea, but, you know, a couple of pennies in his pocket, you know, to go to Manchester United. The times have moved on.
Which team is in a better place though?
That's like,
I don't know. You'd have to say Republic of Ireland.
Ben?
Yeah, I'd say just. I just want to say as well, like, the FAI and the IFA have done great work at underage level with the League of Ireland and NIFL Academies cross-border project, which sees them play against each other and kind of test out their styles. Because from what I can gather from speaking to the FAI is the styles are very distinct at youth level, as in similar to what you see at senior level between the two sides, same kind of styles where they play out. So that's been great work. Also, I would just say, like, Ian Harris had quite a, you know, well-documented run-in with Damien Duff, and Damien Duff was the manager of Shelburne in the League of Ireland, about the League of Ireland and about players and stuff. So, again, I would kind of stick to the experts who want what's best for actual footballers.
Yeah.
All right, I'll have to leave it there this week. The Green Scene on Off the Ball is, as always, with Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams. We'll see you next week.
The Green Scene on Off the Ball with Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams.